Translation: The 16th dear servant of Nityananda Prabhu was Dhananjaya Pandit. He was very much renounced and always merged in love of Krishna. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura writes in his Anubhasya, Pandit Dhananjaya was a resident of the village in Katwa named Sitala. He was one of the 12 Gopals. His former name, according to the Gaura Gonadesha Deepika 127, was Vasudam. Sitalagram is situated near the Mangalakota police station and Chekara post office in the district of Burdwan. On the narrow railway from Burdwan to Katwa is a railway station about 9 miles from Katwa, known as Kaichara. One has to go about a mile northeast of this station to reach Sitala. The temple was a thatched house with walls made of dirt. Some time ago, the Zamindars of Bajravan, Kabasi, the Mulliks, constructed a big house for the purpose of a temple, but for the last 65 years the temple has been broken down and abandoned. The foundation of the old temple is still visible. There is a Tulasi pillar near the temple, and every year during the month of Kartik, October, November, the disappearance day of Dhananjaya is observed. It is said that for some time, Pandit Dhananjaya was in a Sankirtan party under the direction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when he went to Vrindavan, before going to Vrindavan, he lived for some time in a village named Sanchada Panchada, which is 6 miles south of the Memarai railway station. Sometimes this village is also known as the place of Dhananjaya, Dhananjayara Pata. After some time, he left the responsibility for worship with a disciple and went back to Vrindavan. After returning from Vrindavan to Sitala Gram, he established a deity of Gaurasunda in the temple. The descendants of Pandita Dhananjaya still live in Sitala Gram and look after the temple worship. Om Gyanti Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svabhadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu O Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Taptakanchana Gorangi Vindavanishvari Rishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Shri Radha Gokul Nanda Ki Jai. So we carry on with the chapter about the expansions of Lord Nityananda. And so we heard yesterday about, I think it was Jagadisha Pandit and the history of Jagadisha Pandit from the Gaura Gonadesha Deepika was that he was one of the wives of the Brahmins, and therefore he was taking on a similar nature of the pastime in Chaitanya Leela. And so today we have Dhananjaya Pandit. So this is all related to Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. And it says that when the Lord appears in this world, he doesn't appear alone, but he appears with his entourage, his confidential companions and servants. And that's for a purpose, that's to spread Krishna consciousness. And the pastimes are there to attract the conditioned souls, and also to educate the devotees, attract and then educate. Simultaneously, these literatures are doing both things. So one thing I noticed is that he said that Jagadish Pandit, he was a servant of Lord Chaitanya, and at one point he went to Jagannath Puri and he brought a deity back to his hometown, and there worship of that deity was carried on. Actually, this is traditional in India, that the preaching process is to that everybody's schooled in the culture, just like we're, I don't know about now, but when I was a boy, when I was a lad, we used to, get off to Sunday school and, listen to the religious instruction classes. And so the culture was there. I think it's become more do what you want nowadays. There's not so much emphasis on that. But in India, at least 5,000 years ago, the process was that there was a temple and everybody used to go to the temple. And if anybody didn't go to the temple, they were invited. And gradually, people from all walks of life, people who were interested in material assets, some were more into spiritual assets. But when they came to the temple, specifically, they started to understand about a personality, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his deity form. And then, of course, they would hear the Sankirtan within the temple, and they would take prasadam, and as they became purified, they would become more inquisitive, and then they would start to practice devotional service in increasing increments. So unfortunately, that's not the case now. Things have changed in the world. So this culture was once prominent all over the earth planet in days gone by, but in due course of time, the age of Kali wears on, and everything material starts to decompose, break down. And so a religious process also becomes broken down. And so what we have now is, I don't know if anybody's noticed, when something breaks down, it breaks down slowly at first, yeah? When something rusts, we used to have, the cars nowadays, they don't rust so much. But back about 30, 40 years ago, if it lasted 3 or 4 years, you were doing well. Before you had to patch them up, you were just patching. At first, there was a little scratch and there was a little bit of rust. And you'd scrape it out and put a bit of anti-rust, then a little bit of paint, and then it looked brand new again, for about 3 months. And then, gradually, it came to tying things on and riveting things so that it wouldn't fall apart. So it became a bit more prominent. And then, then after some time, wings started falling off. So this was a gradual, and then all of a sudden it's completely finished. It's no good. So this is, it starts with a little. So the fall of religion starts with a little. There was one, I think it was a Baptist. He was Baptist. He said, it's not the big diversions that we're bothered about. Everybody can see that, this is completely off. It's the little diversions. Then it's nearly right. It's all right. It's nearly right. We've nearly got it together. And then that becomes, it's a little bit nearly all right. And eventually it becomes a big diversion. So same thing. So this is how things break down from a little. And now we've got to the situation where, it's just like, scandalous what's happening. People are being ripped off left, right and centre. They don't even try to hide it anymore. And so as a result, even religion is suffering like anything. I think there's 15% of people in this country go to church. And when we go into the villages, especially, and even into Watford or into any big town, we see a huge monument which must have took like 50 years to build, or many years anyway, 20 years. And they've put a lot of work into building this church because it was a centre of the community. Only 200 years ago, people were very, very pious and used to attend church regularly. But now, what do we have? We don't have any of that. We have, you know, they're throwing boxes up. They last a few years and they fall down again. And as far as religion goes, you know, people have got no interest hardly. Even when the Asians come here, they, you know, from Asia, they're relatively more interested in spiritual life. But after a few years in this country, they become very much westernized. So I'm just setting the scene. This is the situation we're in now. So the next verse is Dhananjaya Pandit. He said he engaged in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement for some time before he went to Vrindavan. So I say that's the position of this movement, is that it's a Sankirtan movement, and it's not just that a few people actually engage, but everybody's meant to be in the Sankirtan mood, at least, of pushing on the preaching. And so what does this entail? This entails breaking down the old system, or breaking out of the new system and reaching out. They call it outreach, is that right? Outreach. You know, instead of everybody coming here, we have to go out there. So this is the time of year when we have outreach, and Dhananjaya is giving us the example that he used to perform Harinam Sankirtan. So Sriram Maharaj, in his Sudha Bhakti Chintamani, he writes about this duty of a person to preach. And he specifically said it starts with this Harinam, because people are so far away that, you know, they can't understand anything. And by Harinam and some prasadam, they gradually become a little bit closer. And then we can start the book distribution. But actually, we're in an emergency age as well. It's actually a case where we have to immediately get out the books. Has anybody done book distribution? Who's done book distribution? What percentage is doing book distribution? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So that's good. We're getting there. But the marathon, this is the year of change. Does anybody recognise it's the year of change? Yeah, it's starting to, you know, the congregation of devotees are becoming more involved. Yesterday we went to a program in Harrow, and I think maybe 1%, maybe out of 15 people, maybe one or two had previously done any Sankirtan at all. And so we had a little kirtan and then a little talk about Sankirtan, and then we went out, and everybody was fairly nervous, as you can imagine. And actually, everybody cleaned up. He went out, and we did how many? 130 books between 15 people. What's that? Any good mathematicians? How many is that each? Hey, 130, I think. Oh, 120, I think it was. 120 books, 15s into 120. Was it 8 books each? So, you know, that's really good. In an hour and a half. And so, when you go door to door, it's very difficult because people are on their own territory, aren't they? You know, an Englishman's home is his castle. And so people feel affronted, you know, what's this person doing coming to my door? And then we came back and we were all reading the scores out, and everybody took prasadam and everybody was blissful. So this is actually life. Prabhupada said he once was on a preaching venture, and his disciples had arranged quite a few programs during the day, so much so that he didn't have a chance to take prasadam. And he was just preaching at one particular program after another. Then it came to, you know, late at night, and he came back, and there was some hot milk and puris. And Prabhupada, with relish, says, this is life. Preaching all day and then hot puris and hot milk and puris at night. So that's actually the feeling we get when we go out and preach. There's so many ways this movement's preaching, And just to be a part of the movement means we're involved in that preaching activity. But there's also a special taste from doing what Dhananjaya Pandit did, and that's personally going out there and experiencing, you know, what Prabhupada's talking about, that there's another realm. When we go out there, it means that we're more vulnerable. Prabhupada said the devotees risk everything to preach Krishna consciousness. What does he mean by risking everything? Well, when we think about it, you know, we're mixing with materialists. Is that right? We haven't got the comfort of the temple or the association of the devotees so much. So what does that invoke in a person when he's in that situation? We feel vulnerable, we take shelter. And so it says that when we go out on Sankirtan, Lord Chaitanya is personally present. And we can actually feel that we're we're very much vulnerable, but we feel supported. And there's a reciprocation there as well. Each person we meet, there's some bhava. We're attracting them to Krishna, even though we may not be successful straight away. And then at some point during the evening, we'll find that Krishna gives he's given his mercy all the time, but at some point he gives his real mercy. Well, one door we went to, we were having a hard time. Really difficult. And so we went to this, probably about a couple of minutes ago, we went to this house, and one devotee, Nimai, went there, and I was just doing the next door. We split up for the last 5 minutes so we could do more doors. And he went to this door, and he started talking to this lady. He said, "You're selling fish?" And he said, no, we're not selling fish. I don't know if she got that idea. And he said, "No, we're passing out these books on vegetarianism." He said, "Oh, I'll have one of those." And she gave him £5. And then Nimai said, "Well, take one of these as well." And he gave me a bag of Adgita. He said, "Oh." And she took out, she said, "Give me that fiver back." And she gave him a tenner. And so all day, all the evening, we've been struggling like anything. And then at the end of the evening, you know, Krishna's saying that, you know, this is the result of Sankirtan. I'm the doer. You don't even have to worry. I'm the doer and I'm the protector. So, very nice evening yesterday. I'll just read some quotes from Sudha Bhakta Chintamani by Shivarama Swami about preaching. So first thing is, how are people going to understand this subject matter? It seems that, you know, they're so far in the modes of nature that how can they understand the books? So we said earlier that first is the Harinam, and then there's the Prasadam distribution. But we have a kind of activity now which we can include all of them. I remember I was just 2 days ago, we were in Watford. There were only three of us, and there was two on the, you know, one of playing the Madonga, one was singing, and a book table. And then I just thought I'd do a few books. And I tried doing it before the Harinam started, and it was really difficult. And then as soon as we started chanting, everybody started to stop. So, you know, is this the Sankirtan of the future? Sankirtan party and books. So both things, we can do books straight away, in other words. You know, there's two kinds, we have to... Sankirtan means instilling faith. There's two kinds of people in this world generally, and that's the one who don't have any faith, the faithless, and those who have a little bit of faith. But they're more or less, you know, there's not much difference between them, so we have to more or less treat them the same. So a devotee's first thing is to instill faith. And we instill faith by our character. You know, people recognize there's something different about this person. You know, not just the way we dress, but, you know, with the attitude. And then let me just hear from this person. And then from that little bit of faith, we can it can grow. But by getting a book, it says that we give that person an opportunity to really develop his faith. So it may be said that, is it book distribution? We sometimes have a dilemma, which is the most important, hearing or reading books. So if we've heard both sides of the story. Who thinks it's hearing? Reading books. Who thinks it's both? Yeah. Actually, not long ago, it's quite a time ago, there was, and it still may be prominent, that we have to hear from the realized soul, otherwise we can't understand anything. This was one philosophy at one time. Well, that's actually defeating Prabhupada's movement, because Prabhupada wrote these books in such a way that anybody who's practiced in understanding this philosophy and reading it, then it has deep meaning for that person. And anybody who's fresh, just coming to read the books, then it actually has meaning for that person also. So the books are designed in such a way that, you know, wherever we start to read them, Prabhupada explains, we can start to understand something about Krishna consciousness. So, you know, reading's very important. It's a chance to absorb ourselves in the philosophy. Otherwise, if we don't read, we don't really know what we're hearing. Does that make sense? We're just hearing and we don't have any reference point. I remember Prabhupada, when he came to England, he had one servant with him, and this particular servant, he was becoming a little bit distanced in his devotional service. You know, he was losing his a little bit of faith. And what happens when we start becoming a little bit that way inclined is we become interested in material things more. This is the first indication that spiritual life doesn't seem quite as attractive as it was before. And so at that time, it was 1969, and it was the moon landing. Can anybody remember the moon landing? You know, it was on the news every day. And so this devotee was really following this moon, because he was from America. So when we start becoming weak in spiritual life, we identify with the time. We identify with the body and, you know, our country, our relationships with others on a material platform. So he was really following this, and he was reporting to Prabhupada every day, Srila Prabhupada, now they're 3/4 of the way there to the moon. And Prabhupada would acknowledge, okay. And then he'd keep giving a report. And then eventually he says, Prabhupada, tomorrow they will land. And Prabhupada said, oh. And he says, I'm going to hire a television, Prabhupada. And so he didn't stem his enthusiasm. He says, and so he brought it, he hired a television, he put it in the room. He says, Prabhupada, will you watch it? He says, okay, I'll watch it. Well, actually, Prabhupada sat the other way, looking away from the television. And I think it was Dhananjaya who was massaging his head. And he got absorbed in the television at the moon landing. And Prabhupada went. And so Dhananjaya sat on the floor and Prabhupada massaged his head. He says, this is how we massage. Concentrate on what you're doing. And so it happened the same time he was watching, and he got absorbed in the moon landing again. And Prabhupada said, yeah, he massaged his head again. So anyway, it came to the point where, who was the first one to put his foot on the moon? Any good memories? Armstrong, was it? Was it? And so he said, Prabhupada, they've landed on the moon. And Prabhupada said, oh. He said, are there any trees there? Are there any mountains and lakes? He says, no, Prabhupada. He says, are there any people, cities, provinces? He says, no, Prabhupada, it's a moon. Prabhupada said, they have not landed on the moon. And that was it. When that devotee heard that, he couldn't take any more. He actually went away. And Prabhupada tried to always to, you know, with his subtle way, tried to keep him interested. And anyway, he was speaking to some of his disciples later, some of his senior disciples. And he said, I could understand him not believing me when I made that comment. But how could he not believe the Vedic literatures? So this is what Prabhupada was taking his reference from Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is emphasizing how important it is to read these books. It's not just a matter of hearing without reading, but both things simultaneously develop a strong understanding. What's the benefits of hearing? Any benefits? We should think about these benefits. It'll inspire us to pick up a book. Because usually what happens, if we get a little bit of, you know, if it's a few days or a few weeks since we've picked a book up, what happens? It's like the last thing we want to do, isn't it? You know, there's something, we're just about to pick one up and then something will come into the mind. Well, just get this done first. Has anybody noticed that? We're just going to pick one up and then something else comes into the mind. I'll do this first. Does that ring a bell? And so, you know, we have to develop this habit. Otherwise, it's very difficult to maintain our strength. From hearing, you know, we'll find that after a session of hearing, you know, we feel like actually something different. There's some substantiality there. We don't feel so fickle. I remember once I was on Sankirtan. It wasn't the Sankirtan we do now. It was the painting marathon. We used to do paintings, you know, that little bit of digression. It had gone a long way, and all of a sudden, we were out there with a flat hat on, a pair of trousers, you know, and we were going door to door with a roll of paintings, trying to find the biggest houses to sell. And so I used to go out with somebody in the first few weeks, and then this particular person, he had to go to another part of the country and was on my own. And so I went out on, I think it was Liverpool. And I was in the middle of Liverpool, like this. And I got this really strange feeling. I thought, I shouldn't be here, you know. You know, I'm thinking, and you get that feeling sometimes. And so I thought I better ring Shiva and Maharaj up. So I rang up Maharaj. It's really difficult. I'm on my own, you know. I think I should go back to the temple. He says, read, Abhay, read. And so I picked a book up and started reading, and I read for about an hour, and I actually felt a completely different person. So this is the potency. And so we have to understand this for the benefit of others. They just read. Prabhupada says if they continuously read, there's benefit. If they read one shloka, there's benefit. If they read half a shloka, there's benefit. If they read one line, there's benefit. If they read half a line, there's benefit. So, you know, and we've got benefited. The, you know, what is it? Devotees, Paradukaduki. This is real devotee, actually. Devotional service starts with personal interest, and then it increases to extended interest. When we have something valuable and we really appreciate it, then we naturally feel that we should, you know, share that with others. But association is vital in order to develop that particular mentality. Otherwise, we were saying that reading the books on one's own is helpful, but reading in the association of devotees is more beneficial. And so when we're doing Sankirtan and people start to take an interest, in the past there's not been so much follow-up. But, you know, now we have these sanghas, don't we? And bhakti vrikshas. And so every person who takes a book, if we keep in contact and we make that person strong, then he can start his own little sangha up. We don't have to think about building big temples and another little sangha. And then, you know, the movement naturally, organically grows. I know Prabhupada said that in Bombay, there was one map with 100 temples. 100 temples in Bombay. But these temples were actually devotees' houses where they got the deity. He says we can have 10,000 temples in Bombay. So that was Prabhupada's vision. He wasn't so much into... He established temples, but he wanted to see that, you know, people develop their devotional life outside of that sphere also, because that's what's lacking. You know, temple life is there, but how much association can we get once a week at the temple? And also, when we have our own little sangha, it means that it enlivens us to you know, prepare for other people to come and listen to Krishna Katha, cook the feast, so many things. It really involves us. And it's something we feel enlivened about. This is Krishna consciousness. This is the Sangatan movement. So that association is, we take association and we give association. And we were saying yesterday that it's explained that there was one Kurma Brahman. This is a very good pastime, a very relative pastime to the present moment in ISKCON. That previously it's been renunciance movement generally. Young men come, young women come, we drop everything, live in the temple, go out preaching full-on devotional service. But the full-on devotional service has now gone to another different realm. That was the pioneering stage. You know, you just, like the gold rush, you just set off and stake your land. But now we've got to develop that land. So now we're developing the congregation. And so when Lord Chaitanya, he was travelling, he took sannyas in January, February time, Falgun is it, and then he went to Jagannath Puri and he converted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And then he set off on his Indian tour, South Indian tour. And he went to Alalanath. And there he bade farewell to most of the devotees. And he just took one devotee with him called Krishnadas. And one of the first places he went was Kurukshetra. And in Kurukshetra, Lord Chaitanya's process was, you know, like we've just been talking about. He would go to one place, he'd chant the holy name, he'd enliven the devotees, and he'd tell them, now you go to your village and you do the same thing. This was Lord Chaitanya's mood. And then he would go to the next village and he'd enliven the devotees, Harinam Sangatan. Then he'd explain the same thing. All through 6 years, he never did anything different. And then in the very beginning of his tour, he went to Kurukshetra, and there was one Brahmin there. Lord Chaitanya would only eat at the house of the Brahmins, and he invited Lord Chaitanya for lunch, and he fed him very nicely, washed his feet, he poured the water over his family's heads. Then an amazing thing happened. You know, he's in family life, he's engaged his wife in cooking, he's looking after the kids, and he's looking after them so nicely. And he pours water on all the heads. Then he went to Lord Chaitanya and he said, now, take me with you. I want to leave this family life. So that's been the tendency also in ISKCON in the past. That when family life becomes a little too difficult, then we want to find a different path. But that's not what Lord Chaitanya said. He said, no, you stay where you are. He said, you just carry on in your situation. And if you read these books, Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, and you all chant Sankirtan morning and evening, and also you go out and whoever you meet, you tell them about Krishna. He said, if you do this, the material energy cannot touch you. And also, you will see me again here. In other words, what we were saying earlier, we see Lord Chaitanya when we're preaching. There's no doubt about it. Every devotee who's preached, they see Lord Chaitanya. See means, what does vision mean? It means hearing, it means understanding. We understand Lord Chaitanya's present. And so he told him not to be a crazy fellow. Well, he told that to Sanatana Goswami, actually. But he told him to stay in his own position and just preach and set up a sangha. So this is the life of the movement. That association is so vital in the beginning. Prabhupada said that in Bhagavad Gita, that in the beginning of spiritual life, it's important that a devotee gets proper association. So we've been doing the contacting, but not giving the association. So this is the very much can be given through these sanghas. If these sanghas are all over, wherever Sankirtan devotees go to distribute books, we can have, there's a sangha not far away. The combination is very nice. So, reading books. Another reason why we should give that association, this is an extension of the Sankirtan movement, is that there was a prison service, I've probably told this before, but it's relevant, where we distributed books in prisons. I think, what's his name, Maharaj? Chandramouli Swami. he was heading that up. He wrote a book on it, I think, where we put literatures in the prison, and they put it in the prison library, and the prisoners can read about, you know, devotional life also. And so there was one prisoner in the early days. They hadn't got permission to go to the prison, but they had permission to put the books in the prison. And so one of the prisoners, he read Bhagavad Gita from front to back cover, and the wardens. They told this. They got permission to go after some time. So they told this devotee when he came, says, "You want to go and see this prisoner here?" He says, "He's been reading these books like anything. He's driving everybody mad preaching." And so he went to see this devotee, and I'm assuming he was a devotee, but and he said, "So, what do you think to Bhagavad Gita?" He says, "Oh, it's wonderful. The best thing I've ever read." He says, "What conclusion do you get back from reading Bhagavad Gita?" He said, "I concluded that when I get out of prison, the six people I have to immediately kill." So we read Bhagavad Gita through our own conditioning. You know, he probably read that in the first chapter where it talks about six aggressors. You know. And it says that any man can immediately kill them. That spurred him on to read the rest. It's like that, isn't it? We want to read the parts which are, you know, favourable for us. I remember when I was reading Science of Self-Realisation. Really good. You know, karma, reincarnation. Wow. Four regulative principles. Then, you know, it's like bittersweet, isn't it? You know, you've just got such a taste from it. You think, well, there may be a way around this. So you pick it up again and start reading. So, yeah, we have to cultivate people. That's the point. You know, you leave people alone and they just... In Manchester, it was an Indian devotee. He bought a set of Bhagavatams. But I kept telling him, you know, why don't you start chanting? He said, I'm all right. I like reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And he was reading like anything. Every night he'd come home and for about an hour at night or more, he'd just read through the Bhagavatam. And, you know, this was over a couple of months. And then he got halfway through the Srimad Bhagavatam and he just stopped. And as far as I know, he never picked it up again. And I realised that he wasn't actually chanting. So, you know, it's not just the book distribution, but we have to go to that next stage and cultivate. I mean, in Bhagavad Gita, it explains this point that in the third chapter, how the hierarchy of the senses, you know, there's the sense objects, and then there's the senses, and then there's the mind, and then there's the intelligence, and then the false ego and the soul. And, you know, in order, they're all superior. And then in the purport, he says that, well, actually, the sense objects become more powerful than the senses, the material body. And that's when we become... In spiritual consciousness, we're more powerful than the sense objects. But in material consciousness, they're more powerful than the senses. They attract the senses. And so Prabhupada writes that it's just a matter of having the intelligence to see that and just engage in devotional service. So we get that from Srimad Bhagavatam. We get that from Bhagavad Gita. We get the philosophy. But we don't get the strength, because Krishna says that even though that will work, there's every chance of a fall down. And he says that's due to a lack of contact with Krishna. And so that contact with Krishna is by all different processes of devotional service, obviously, but mostly through chanting the holy name. So this is what the book distribution is for. It's to get every people to into the process of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra in an ongoing way. And that's where we need the association of devotees. And anybody can take to devotional service. We shouldn't think that some people are qualified and some people are not. According to the Vedic system, we gradually raise ourselves through the modes, don't we? We raise ourselves eventually to the brahminical mode, and then we can take the devotional service. But in the next pastime, where Lord Chaitanya is travelling in South India, immediately afterwards, there's one leper, Vasudev. And Lord Chaitanya leaves Kurma Brahman's particular situation, and immediately just afterwards, this leper called Vasudev comes, who's dying to meet Lord Chaitanya. And Kurma Brahman says, oh, he just left yesterday. And so Vasudev is completely smashed. He just falls to the floor weeping. And at that point, Lord Chaitanya, you know, is inspired. He understands, and he turns round and he goes back. And he meets this Brahman and he embraces him. And all his sinful reactions immediately disappear. He becomes completely cured. So this is the result of this Sankirtan movement, is that, you know, people are in so many abominable conditions. And we have the opportunity to actually change people around. It's such a wonderful experience. It's such a... I mean, how many times do people... You know, how many people have got that opportunity? You know, even charitable people in this world, they want to feel that, you know, sense of doing good. Is that right? We all want to feel that sense of doing something good. But, you know, we've got the sense, we've got the opportunity to really change somebody's life completely. They're going completely in the opposite direction. They're doing the wrong things. And just by stopping a person, a few sweet words, even if he doesn't take a book, you know, some nice interaction, it's, you know, Krishna recognizes if that person has got some warm sentiment towards the devotee, he starts his spiritual life. And so every devotee has got that opportunity every day to preach Krishna consciousness. Just like Vasudev got the benefit, you know, there's so many Vasudevs out there. They don't have leprosy of the body, they have other kind of leprosy. It's eating away their whole being, their intelligence, mind, like that. Yeah, so Prabhupada's mood was selfless service. This is the difference. We can be in Krishna consciousness, and we can be comfortable, relatively comfortable. You can't ever be comfortable in Krishna consciousness. In one respect, is that we're always, you know, pushing a little bit, always a little bit of an effort. But even that can become a little bit, you know, comfortable. So this particular marathon is a challenge, that we can just go out of our comfort zone and do a little bit more for Lord Chaitanya, become a little bit more selfless, and the result is wonderful. There's many examples in the past of devotees, even in this movement, who've attained success through just pushing themselves a little bit for Srila Prabhupada. There was one devotee called Sudam. He was preaching in Japan. And he really didn't want to preach there, actually. But Prabhupada, he eventually gave him enough encouragement, and he said that if you do this service for me... I think I may have got this story mixed up a little bit, but it's a similar... He said, if you do this service for me, he says, at the end of life I'll come back and I'll take you back to Godhead. And he thought, deal. And so he did this service. And eventually, I think he left the movement, and he got some terminal disease. And just before he left, his body was so weak that he couldn't even sit up. And just before he left his body, the devotee saw him. He sat up. He said, Prabhupada, you've come. And then he fell down and left his body. So, you know... Lord Chaitanya, he doesn't overlook any sacrifice that we make. You know, we're breaking free from our comfort zone, our bodily designation, by just stretching ourselves that little bit every day. So thank you. I'd like to stop there if anybody has any comments or questions.